This is Andy.
And this is Matt.
And you're listening to
The Hop Podcast with No Name.
What a dumb name.
It's so stupid. Episode 43. And in saying that, I really hope that I'm accurate.
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure this is 43.
Nailed it.
At least I hope so. If it's not, don't just delete that last part in your mind and whatever the number was when you clicked it. We're good there. But it's a continuation episode of sorts.
Yes.
Because the last time we were together, we talked about
my short fallings as a human.
I was actually not going to bring you up, but fitting for you to make it about you. So I was going to talk about the session that we had and the question that we were asked, which was perfectly timed to the idea of shifting blame. And the idea was, if we're starting to look at and accept this hop philosophy practice as something we want to do, it's very natural to go from, I used to blame the people doing the work, but I find myself needing to blame someone, and it just moves one rung up the ladder, two rungs up the ladder, to either those who are going out and learning the work or those who are leaders of those people doing the work.
Yeah.
And we had just come off a session not too long ago where we were engaging with those leaders, essentially.
Yeah, leaders of a piece of an organization.
Yep.
That I had a
And you were totally
visceral
calm about
response.
Wow, you're so easygoing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we said we were going to give ourselves some time.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to meet with them again.
Yep. Try to stop making assumptions.
Correct. And then we would record whatever happens next.
Correct.
And wow, are we true to our words? So, Andy.
So I yelled at everybody and we were fired. No.
Yeah. This is a desperate plea for help. This is not terrible. No, it was a great session with a good group of people who were willing to share and talk.
Yes.
And so.
Yeah. So.
What do you think?
What do I think? So I left the first session feeling very angry.
If only we could have recorded.
I already summarized that. But feeling as though the folks that had some amount of resourcing and decision rights to make change within their organization really had such a low opinion of their workforce that they'd struggle to put resourcing in a place that wasn't just telling people to do something different and being upset if they didn't do it differently. And you rightfully told me that I was making a lot of assumptions in how I was interpreting people's comments. And that when we went and met with them again, we should learn much more about what they're trying to accomplish, what their thought process is, so that we could make sense of the comments.
And for the record, I mean, you were making a lot of assumptions, but they were also from your past experiences where really negative outcomes had happened.
Correct.
Because
yes.
it felt so, that conversation felt so similar to conversations you'd had in the past when you were in seat at a role that it was just.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is where the strongest assumptions come from, right?
Yep.
They mimic something that we've seen already, and therefore it's really hard to put them in a different box. And I would say in terms of, so our thought was that we were going to go in and we were going to start the session by doing some more operational learning. And then,
we were going to do operational. You and I.
You and I, right.
We're going to do operational learning to try to
learn,
understand more about the group.
Correct.
The dynamic at that location.
So that we could connect better.
Yes.
And I think we did part of that well, and I think we did part of it poorly.
And there's a third part.
Yeah.
In all good things. Things come in threes. That was, I think they had some time to do some self-reflection.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So the stuff that I think we did well is that we asked a lot of questions about the types of events that they were seeing, about the way that they felt like they had to handle it. We learned quite a bit about the stress that they feel to just come up with a solution set, even when they can't really see what a solution set could be. We learned quite a bit about the turnover of their employees and new folks that were coming in, and frustration of feeling as though the new generation coming in like didn't have the same work ethic as others. I mean, we could go on and on in terms of.
And I'll just add one thing. Yeah. The production pressure was real.
Oh, yeah. That, I mean, more so than many places that I've at least interfaced with, the production pressure itself was so high that it seemed to outweigh most other things. A lot of people say that, right? They say like production pressure is high. And then
production
when you go,
king.
Production is king. But when you go and learn from folks, it kind of just feels like a normal amount of production pressure. This came across as the only thing that mattered,
yes.
Meaning that it was well known that there were lots and lots of processes that were intentionally subverted in order to save time, and that it was part of the fabric of the culture of this is just what we do to get work done, and that it wasn't like a subgroup of people doing it. It was everyone. It was, you know, folks that were supervising. It was supervisors of supervisors, all of which were like, yeah, we're just going to get it done and we're going to bypass all of these different things that were in place that theoretically were controls to help keep people safe. And that was just normal. That was a normal part of work because of the amount of production pressure that people were under.
Which, as me being the non-safety person, I actually kind of got it. Like, I kind of understood why they took so much pride in being that productive.
Yeah, there was a sense of pride, even in the
face of all these issues, we have the resilience and the creativity to get things done and in general still keep our people safe.
Yeah.
It wasn't as if they were totally saying safety doesn't matter. That was not at all their message.
Right.
It was just clear to us, and they made it very clear to us how important production was.
Yeah. So that part we did a really good job learning about. What I don't think we asked questions about, nor did I really get to a place of understanding, was where the opinion of the workforce, like why it seemed so low.
The leader's opinion or the workforce's opinion about the work?
The leader's opinion of the workforce.
Okay.
And the reason why I got a sense that people didn't have a very high opinion of their workforce was just based on direct quotes of what people said, which I won't repeat because we want to be able to keep it anonymous for folks. But there were direct quotes that basically said, hey, people, I mean, they don't care. And they just kind of just really don't get it. And they don't have good work ethic. And they don't, you know, just sort of repeated statements about the workforce not being seemingly a great group of people.
Yep.
And that I didn't operationally learn to understand, which if we had more time would have absolutely been a place to ask more questions of like, oh yeah, so give me some examples of when we feel that way and what that looks like. And we could have learned at least where people were getting that impression from.
Which is always a difficult part about us running training is there's not infinite amount of time.
No.
And you... I mean, you're very concise, which is helpful. But it's also, I think we're both pretty curious people.
Yeah.
And so we want to learn everything there is to learn. But we have to battle the idea that we still have a limited amount of time.
Right. I mean, the same constraint that exists in any organization too, right? Right. That we hear all the time. It's like, well, we don't have like endless amount of time. Yeah. That's one of our more precious resources. And so similar to any sort of operational learning within an organization, we had to balance the amount of time that we had to do the thing that we had been asked to do with being able to learn enough to connect. And I think in terms of what we talked about, because we learned more, we were able to connect more, meaning we scrapped the entire direction that we were originally going to go in for the session. We actually like didn't even follow through on some of the like open threads we had the first time because we were like, oh, we have to change what we're doing in order to meet the thought process where it is. So we're going to have to make sure that the types of stories we tell are different and that they connect directly with the work that was being done in this place in a way that maybe we could help shift what felt like some deeply ingrained thought process around how people were viewing the workforce and around how people kind of thought bad things happened. And so that part we did well. I got to tell you though, my frustration with individuals didn't change. But after the first session, my frustration with comments made by individuals I had allowed to paint everyone that we were talking to, meaning I left that session feeling like, well, the leadership team here is really, really struggling. And I painted it across every person that we were talking to, even though not every person had said the things that were frustrating to me. And after the second session, I was able to differentiate between individuals, mm-hmm. meaning it no longer felt like this entire group was not able to see some of the basics of this concept. It was like, oh, there's some individuals that have louder voices that are really, really struggling. And some of the folks that were extremely quiet the first time spoke up towards the end of the second session that we had. And that absolutely changed
my perception. Which is fun for me. Because yeah. I look at, you know, we get to see them if they're on camera during a virtual training or in person. We get to see them. And I'm always thinking, like, wow, this person hates this.
Yeah, you just watch their body language and they're like disengaged. And you're like, man, they just...
We are not getting through.
They hate everything about us.
And we usually know what the most part the negative feedback is or the apprehension is.
Yeah.
So we try to address it as we're going through and they don't change. And I'm like, this person just couldn't be bothered. And then they say something usually around like the 3/4 mark of the total training, if it's 1 day or 2 days. And I'm like, oh, look at my assumptions proven wrong immediately.
Right. Yep.
Not only do they get it, they're thinking about how to apply it immediately.
Yes.
And I'm always shocked by this.
Yeah.
Yeah, Don't judge a book by its cover. Unless you're Matt Florio, then you do it. You can't help it.
Yeah. And there were a few folks that had been quiet, that had body language that I would have assumed that they, exactly what you said, they hated everything that we were saying. They thought it was you.
And
they always liked
me, but I was like, they really don't like Andy.
They didn't like the subject. They didn't care for me as a person. They weren't amused at all by anything. And then towards the end of the second session, a few of those folks spoke up and what they said was profound. And actually they called out to the rest of the folks that were there. They said, hey, this is important, right? Like me, I think we were talking about the concept of even identifying error traps. Like we were starting with some concepts that a lot of places historically have already done that space. And we're like, okay, maybe we should even talk about error traps and like if they identify error traps and what it looks like. And so we started having that conversation and some of the folks that had been quiet said, this is really important for us to do. And I don't know that we do it enough or do it often enough or even really know where some of these error traps are. And that was quiet, meaning they said those profound statements and sort of the rest of the team sat in that comment for a bit and thought about it. And no one disagreed. Yeah.
That to me was really interesting. It wasn't like, nah, you don't know what you're talking about. It was
like, oh yeah. Not like, oh, you know, no, we do it. You just aren't involved in it. It was yeah, maybe we don't do that very much.
Which I think is always interesting because we say this often, which when we're talking to any group, our stories are really helpful, but the stories that they're going to create are most important and then sharing those internally. This is the exact same idea to me. So we've seen a lot of things over time and a lot of consistencies across groups, but it's always when someone pipes up and says, I can speak sort of our direct language, our dialect, if you will, and I'm going to say it in those words and everyone hears it in a totally different light because it's coming from someone that does know their day-to-day operations. It speaks volumes to that group, no matter where we are, that someone in that room at that moment says something that is in the language that they all speak.
Yeah. And it has incredible meaning for that moment.
Yep.
So I think that's the perception that changed for me. I didn't have this amazing aha moment that I had like misjudged and mischaracterized everything and that, I jumped to conclusions way too quickly, but I absolutely did have a shift of feeling as though maybe this was hopeless. Maybe there was nothing that we were going to be able to change because the thought process was so rooted in frustration and blame and that there was no crack. There's no crack to get into. There was no way to help at all. That was absolutely an assumption. And I wanted to give up. I mean, I could have given up easily if you weren't there to push me and say, stop doing this, Andrea. So it's like,
we would have just went on autopilot.
Yeah, went on autopilot, done
that. When we say stop, we mean like, hey, let's just try to give them as much as we can in terms of like total knowledge of the subject. Hopefully they retain as much as they do, and that's it.
Right.
Instead, we said, no, we can critically think together, you and I, about how to make this, even if it's just 10% of what HOP is, let's make it really relevant to them right now, and they can go and think about it.
Yeah. And so that's the part that shifted, was my belief, my assumption that there wasn't any place to go. And that I had painted this entire group of people with one thought process, which just wasn't true. And we've talked about that before, right? We've talked about the idea that anytime you're introducing these concepts to a group of people, I think historically, sort of naively, my thought process was that I could kind of convince everyone that there's a direction, that shifting a mindset would be valuable. And then in doing it over time, I realized that there's a small section of people that I actually do think that we change a perception, but most of the time what we're doing is just giving authority and language to people that already think this way so that they can then use the way that they've already been thinking in order to make change in an organization. And that there is a subgroup of people that probably will never think this way, and that's okay too. And I guess the thing that I got stuck on was that's okay too part, right? I was like, but it's not okay if nobody's thinking this way, then there is no one to carry this message forward. There's no one to actually act on this if everyone is in the, this doesn't make sense, this is our problem, is our people, you don't understand. If that's the direction everyone's coming from, then I don't really know how to help. And that is the assumption that was absolutely wrong, that there were plenty of people sitting, listening, that this made sense to. They had just been quite quiet.
Yeah, I always think about it as when we're in those situations where it feels like this group is so far away, or a majority of this group is so far away from where we hope they'd get to, can we open some doors? Mm. And maybe they're not going to go in those doors, but can we just unlock them so that at some point,
like maybe later, they'll be like, I'll try this one out. Yeah.
It's kind of acknowledging that there is another way to look at the problems we face every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's I think in general, this was a situation where I saw a lot of leaders who seemingly had high accountability, but also felt incredibly defeated.
Yeah.
And that was tough. They cared, they wanted the best outcomes, and it was just feeling like they were kind of rolling.
Drowning. They felt like they were drowning.
Yeah. I was going to say, is it Sisyphus rolling the rock up the mountain perpetually? Greek mythology? You get it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Just constantly rolling the rock up the mountain.
No. I can picture. I just have no idea who.
I hope I got the name right. Oh, I really do. And seeing as we don't edit this out,
we're going to find out.
but that's what I feel like. There was never going to be a moment of reprieve.
Yeah.
It would just keep going, keep pushing the rock up the mountain. And so hopefully there's a couple of doors open and start thinking about things differently. And the people who, to your point, felt like we gave them a voice and sort of taught the group a common language, get to continue to use that.
So that they could then make change, even if it didn't mean that everyone was going to see it from the same lens, that they could make some change.
And I'll put you on the spot. So connect this back, because this has been 18 minutes or so of the Andy show.
of me just rambling about
which I think was helpful. But I think the original question was, how do we help people who are going through that shifting blame, right?
An individual like myself, right? Yeah. Who is
You're at the organization now.
Yeah. Yeah. You're within the organization and you're shifting blame towards the leaders. And I think that two things can be helpful. One, operationally learning their perspective so that they no longer feel like the villain, like they're working within constraints that make sense to them. So operationally learning whenever you can. And then if that doesn't help shift anything in your mind, focusing on the people who are already advocating for this subject, right? The people where this thought process makes sense to them, and spending all of our time and energy trying to make sure that where it does make sense, people feel that they have the authority and the ability to make change, and recognizing that there are some people who they might not shift their thought process. It's probably a much smaller percentage than on the surface, meaning you can easily broad brush an entire group of people, just like I did, and find out maybe there's only four or five that really are stuck on this. They just happen to be very vocal, and the rest of the folks who are happen to be quite quiet, it makes sense to. But that percentage will exist, and that's okay too.
In the sales world, we call what you're describing multi-threading. I'm not sure if that was used a lot in your side, which was I could get a meeting with the CEO and try to sell the CEO on the tool, but that's one point of contact and they might just not have the time. Whereas if I could find other people, maybe a layer or two below the CEO, get them to be advocates for what we're talking about, they would be better at influencing up, or a collective voice is better at influencing up as well. So it's not just thinking that there's one route to go, there are multiple routes to go, and all we can do is sort of get advocates along that to help spread the message, spread the word, help make some change.
Cool. Multi-threading.
Multi-threading. It's a sales training. It doesn't stop. The sales world never sleeps. All right. That's it. Episode 43, maybe, in the books.
We've got two or three more questions that people have flung our way.
Yes. So and then we're also working on recording something special, which I'm not going to share anything about yet.
Oh.
But once we have a more clear picture, I will start sharing what we're doing, which I'm excited about. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
Well, that's it.
Yep, another one in the books. We did it.
If you want to send us any of your thoughts, actually fling us any of your thoughts, you can do so at the website www.hoppodcast.com.
That's hoppodcast.com.
It's still such a stupid name.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.